Right on the button, guys.
Right last here,
guys.
Stone for Kevin Martin. They want it on the button. The fans are on their feet. Kevin Martin goes out as a champion.
Yes, that intro, folks, can only mean one thing. We survived it all the way through Christmas and New Year's. Happy New Year, everybody, and Merry Christmas and all that jazz. This is Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of Inside Curling with now your two friends. Okay, if you've been a fan of the show, now you really feel acquainted with, of course, Kevin Martin, the world's greatest curler in the world, and the greatest builder of the game. There's no doubt about it. Warren Hansen, and we're lucky to have both of you, really. You know, we're not sure what's going to happen week to week, but one of the things that does happen week to week is we get to tell everybody that you guys are both members of the World Curling Hall of Fame. And I didn't realize they don't just hand that out to anyone, Warren. Huh?
No, we're not going to put your name in, Jim.
Like I told you last week, I'd love to have that on my business card. There's only 18 guys, I think, that are in there now, Warren, from Canada. Is that right?
18 Canadians, men and women, yes, in total.
Yeah, and you and Kevin are each one of those. So that adds a bunch of credibility. Thank God, because I don't bring too much to it. Anyway, on the show today, we've got a bunch of stuff. I hope one day we can come on the show and not have to talk about COVID anymore. But that just isn't the case. For lack of a better term, it's alive and well, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better, but we'll get some updates on what's going on around there in the curling world with that. And hopefully everyone's staying safe. You can get a hold of us. We're on all the social media platforms. We're on Twitter at Curling Inside and Facebook at Inside Curling. And Instagram, you can check us out at Inside Curling Podcast. We want to thank Rod Paulson. If you've followed us at all, and it's really helped growing our audience, our social media stuff is unbelievable. Rod, I don't know if he does anything else now, you guys, because he's just jams all the social media stuff with everything from funny to great topical stuff that we talk about. And he's really good. He's got a company called In-House Strategies, and we thank Rod very much for doing that. Our email is insidecurling@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone, for all your emails, which we really use a lot, which makes the show great. Keep them coming. We can't talk about all the emails, of course. There's just so many that we get. Warren, are you still getting a pile of them? Warren handles all that, Kevin and I. I tried to tell Warren, give those to Kevin. He's got nothing to do. He can handle all those. You're still getting hundreds, Warren, I gather?
It slowed down a little over the holidays, but it's starting to pick up again. So I'm sure in the next couple of weeks here, as we get closer to hopefully curling's happening in Calgary, we're going to have lots of interest.
Martin and I both said we better get Warren another keyboard. He's probably worn out the buttons on the keyboard doing that. Anyway, we love to get them. Don't make them too long. If you want them to get on the show, we'll talk about them. But thank you very much for doing that. Also, we've gone into the Zoom world. This is actually how we do this meeting. And Warren and Kevin had the idea of reaching out to curling clubs if they want us to jump on and do a Zoom call with them. Keep in mind that we're doing it on a limited basis. We've done, I know as a group, we've done a couple of them. Kevin, you did one a couple weeks ago with a bunch of kids, didn't you, from Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's been really good over between Wisconsin and all over the place, actually, with Detroit and Belgium and Barrie, Ontario last week. So yeah, it's been kind of here, there, probably six or seven of them now total. And yeah, they're really fun. And it's one thing neat is that they've been all different groups, be it just the board of directors or a group of high school curlers or whatever the case may be. It's not just one type of group. We've actually been talking to various groups. So that's kind of neat.
Right. Also, we're very happy. We've come this far and now we have a sponsor. The new associate is a company called Manscaped. And for those of you who are fans of the television show Shark Tank, two of the sharks, Lori Greiner and Mark Cuban, bought 25% of this company. I went back and tried to find that show. I haven't found it yet, but Manscaped, without question, is the world's best men's below-the-waist grooming company. Manscaped just recently launched in Canada, so if you are a listener in Canada, this could be your opportunity to experience Manscaped's life-changing product. Go to the Manscaped website at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com. And if you use the code INSIDECURLING, you're going to get 20% off and free shipping. Manscaped.com and use that code InsideCurling. Okay, boys, let's launch in because we got a special guest on today too, which we love, and so does everyone who listens to the show. We want to talk about, first of all, Warren, let's give us an update on COVID and what's happening.
Well, across Canada, and I think pretty much around the world, curling is more or less at a standstill. I will suggest there may be curling happening in a few pockets, depending upon the COVID situation. But generally speaking, I don't think much is taking place. I know some of the clubs, certainly in Western Canada, have announced that they're going to shut down for the year. I know the New West Club here in Vancouver just made that decision a couple of days ago. So everything is more or less at a standstill. The bubble events in Calgary, which seem to be attracting a lot of interest these days, are still planning to be happening as planned, starting in February. And I know there's a lot of concern about it. I even got an email just here this morning suggesting by someone that it was too dangerous. But I think I want to suggest that if this goes ahead, it's been approved by Health Canada and the province of Alberta, and there's a whole pile of precautions in place. And so I think if it happens, we can feel assured it's going to be conducted in a pretty safe manner. But what's going to happen between now and February is going to be interesting. And I think as far as the representatives are concerned, there's no provincial playoffs taking place pretty much from Quebec West, as far as we know at this point. Seems like everybody in those provinces decided not to go ahead. But in Atlantic Canada and in the Northern Territories, there are playoffs taking place. Some have already happened. But the interesting thing for the teams from the territories and from Atlantic Canada, if they go to Calgary and participate in any of these events, when they go home, they've got to quarantine for 14 days. So it's going to be at least a three-week commitment for any of those players to go. So be very interesting to see how this all unfolds moving forward.
Right. Kevin, anything happening with Spiels?
Well, Jimmy, I tell you what, as far as Spawn Spiels where competitive people play, not so much. But, you know, last week we actually got into the outdoor rink. We talked about that, people having a sheet of ice and playing games or playing kind of Bond Spiels with the people at the lake and that type of thing. Well, this week, I want to talk about Croca Curl. I had a whole bunch, and thank you very much for everybody who sent me videos of the various Croca Curl games. But I want to talk about seeing some of the top players building their own sheets of ice to train. Rachel Holman, her and her husband on the farm, they built a nice sheet of ice. Carrie Anderson, quite a few of the players have actually went and built their own sheets of ice and are training that way. So who'd have ever thought that that was a possibility? And but good on everybody for taking the initiative and building their own rinks and having fun and training that way. So that's kind of cool. I've never seen so much outdoor curling activity in my lifetime. It's incredible how many different people are calling. Last week, calling me just to try to purchase curling stones because they want to build their own. Yeah, honestly, it's amazing. And it's not that many stones available for such stuff for outdoor curling, right? The curling stones that are manufactured are very expensive. So that's very difficult to be able to afford. So they kind of need rocks that are out of old clubs that have shut down across the prairies and that type of thing. Croca Curl, I do want to talk about that because it's a fun game. Doesn't take as much room. Like a traditional sheet of curling ice takes, you know, obviously a lot of the rinks that are outside aren't regulation length, but you still need to have 10 or 12 feet wide by at least 70 to 100 feet long. That's a big sheet of ice. Whereas Croca Curl, kind of like the Crokinole game. Do you ever play it, Jimmy? Crokinole?
You know, I'm embarrassed. I'm very immature. I still play it.
Okay. Well, yeah. I love
the one
the
where
game.
You flick like marbles. You flick the little discs, try and get them in the holes there through the little pegs.
Yeah, or hide behind the pegs or whatever. And then, yeah, the other team has to make contact with one of your men first and so on. Yeah, Crokinole. Anyway, so you freeze the six pegs into the ice, be it in the lake or in your yard, and they're solid as a rock. And then you play the game like Crokinole. And I had videos sent to me both with people throwing the rocks or pushing them, either with a push stick or with a broom head. And either way, it's 100%. And the only thing, everybody, is if you're going to do that, a normal curling stone, a traditional rock, they tend to bounce a lot. And you end up chipping the striking bands quite badly. And so there's a steel croquet curl stone made by Thompson Rink out of Winnipeg, and they're indestructible. And that's something that's really important. If you're going to play croquet curl, you should probably get the steel stones because you're going to ruin your rocks. But if you're just going to curl traditional, like 100 foot length or whatever, normal stones are just fine. But the croquet curl, there are a specific type of stone made for that game now, and they're made of steel. So I just want to let everybody know that. And thanks. I just got to thank everybody for sending me all those notes after bringing this up last week. Really appreciate it.
Warren and Kevin and me are going to have a croquet game. Okay. We're going to have a competition. Okay.
Next year.
When you bring up.
Yeah, we're not allowed to get together, Jimmy.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah. We can't flick each other's little disc. Okay. We can't do it. When you say outside curling, Warren, one of the shows when we go back, you're our resident historian. I'm guessing, Warren, that's how curling started, right? Had to be outside, right? And were you alive back then, Warren, when it was still outside, when competitions were?
In the 1500s, I don't think there was any artificial ice plants, Jim. and the curling rocks were actually the ones they picked up off the shore of the river or the lake. So, yeah, it was a little cruder back in those days.
Yeah, right. Anyway, very good, Kev. Thank you for that update. Warren, you've got, we started doing these poll questions and God, we get a lot of response from them. And there was a couple of poll questions we had this week, Warren, and you've got some results and responses from those.
Yes, I do. And let me first say, before I go into this question, we put this question up there because the circumstances with regard to the bubble events changed quite a bit over the couple of week period. In fact, that last time we talked about this, pretty near all the Western provinces were still planning to do provincial playoffs, and that changed a few days ago. It also became very apparent that the quarantine of 14 days was going to be a necessity for Northern Territories and Atlantic Canada. So we asked this question again with that in mind, just to emphasize to everybody that was questioning, what are you running this again for? So the question was, the current state of COVID suggests Ontario and West will not have playdowns. Even in eastern provinces and territories, they will still have to quarantine for 14 days upon return. So with a field that will have some of last year's reps, could potentially have some jurisdictions where no rep or a team further down the line could have the representation, how should the Scotties and Brier in the bubble proceed? We're giving you three options. One is run as planned with whoever it gets sent. 63% felt that was the answer. Cancel the Scotties and Brier outright. 26% felt that was the answer. And take a different approach to it and modify it by suggesting, again, because of the problem of getting teams there, just take probably the top 10 or 12 teams off the Canadian team ranking system and virtually replay the Canada Cup, and that's canceled this year, of course, and call that person the, or that team, the Canadian champions. And 11% thought that was a good idea. So we still see 63% of the curling fans out there feel that the bubble event should go ahead. So hopefully it does. A couple of announcements, a couple out of Curling Canada this week. They announced that the 2022 Brier is going to be held in Lethbridge. Lethbridge, a city that's certainly familiar with the events. They've done the Scotties a couple of times. They did the Women's Worlds. And just 2 years ago, they did the Men's Worlds. So very familiar with the events, and the 2022 Brier will be going there. They also made another interesting announcement, and the fact that Home Hardware has been the sponsor of the Canada Cup now for about 3 years. And of course, the Canada Cup has been canceled for this year. So they have moved that sponsorship over to the Mixed Doubles Canadian Championship. So that will become the Home Hardware Canadian Mixed Doubles if it goes ahead. And I think the other interesting thing was, I asked the question, is TSN possibly going to cover that if that's going to be the case? And they said, yes, they are. To what extent, I do not know, but that would be the first time that the Canadian Mixed Doubles Championship would be covered on TSN. Also want to mention a couple more things out of the World Curling Federation today, an announcement that they've found a new sponsor for the Men's and Women's Worlds held outside of Canada annually. And that sponsor's name is VZUG, which is a Swiss appliance manufacturer. And it's rather interesting. In the release, it still indicated the event will be known as the LGT Worlds. So I'm suggesting that VZUG must be a sponsor that's going to be in a secondary position and not the title. So that's good news for the World Curling Federation. Also like to mention, last week I talked about the Sticks and Stones documentary, and if you're interested in that, it's going to be available January 15th on YouTube, channel DOXNM, DOXNM. I also had mentioned last week that there was another new website out, the houseofcurlingpins.com, which is, if you're a pin collector, have any aspirations in that way, have a look at it. I erred somewhat, and I suggest it was Dave Thomas who had actually created that website. While Dave was involved, it was my friends in Seattle, Cindy and Ken Vassy, that actually are the ones who created the website. So if you're interested in curling pins, go to the houseofcurlingpins.com.
Warren, you probably went through what everyone else does when doing a radio show or a podcast. You know, you try and get people to respond. All you got to do to get people to give you a response is make a mistake when you say something, and you'll hear from them, boom, right away. So I'm sure that's what happened with you. Our guest on the show today, we're gonna bring her in now and get her to weigh in on the topics that we're gonna talk about today. If you don't know who Corinne Brown is, you will shortly. She is a curler from living in Kamloops, but let me just 25 years old. Let me just whip off here some of her stats. Okay, in 2011. She won gold at the Canada Games. In 2012, won bronze at the Youth Olympics. Also in 2012, won gold at the U18 Optimus National Championship. In 2013, she won gold at the Canadian Juniors and represented, of course, Canada at the Worlds in Russia. She's won silver three times at the University Games. In 2020, she won the BC Provincials. This is getting bigger and better. And placed sixth at the Scotties. Corinne Brown, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. And yourself?
Yeah, good. What do you think when you hear all that? You're pretty good, eh? If you forgot how good you are.
It's pretty good back in the day, that's for sure.
Yeah. Tell us, you know, before we jump into a couple of emails here, tell us what's happening with you and your team and COVID and how are things going for you in BC?
Yeah, it's been a very unique season. We were kind of ramping up for it to be probably one of our busiest seasons yet, just with where it lands in the trials cycle. And we're kind of sitting on that bubble of whether we would get kind of a direct buy into the trials or whether it would be in the pre-trials. So we were going to go pretty hard this season. But obviously COVID got in the way of that. I think we've played a total of six competitive games together as a team. We played in a spiel in Kelowna and ended up winning that one, and then traveled to Okotoks to play one game just to have the event canceled. So,
oh no.
Yeah. So luckily, it didn't take too much time out of our schedule, but that was the last time we played, was in Okotoks in mid-November. Luckily in BC, we're still able to practice right now. There's a little bit of limitations on team practices and whatnot, but we're still able to have ice, which is better than some provinces for sure. But it turned out to be a bit of a different year. Rather than playing 10 plus events before Christmas, we played one in a game for a total of six games for the whole season so far.
Right. Give us who's on your team. Let's give those people a little boost.
Sure.
of who you're curling with.
We have lead Samantha Fisher, second Desiree Hawes, third Aaron Pincott, and our coach is Allison McInnes.
Oh, cool. So if they can pull off the Scotties under this bubble, will your team decide to go?
Yeah, we have been put forward as BC's representative based on our finish last year. And if the event does go, we will be attending.
Fantastic. Do you know any teams across the country, which I'm sure you do know, that if they get picked to go to the Scotties, depending on what the province decides, that they will not go because of COVID? Have you heard of anyone who said, even if I get picked or qualify for the Briar under whatever form, or the Scotties, sorry, that they said, well, they're not going to go?
To be honest, I haven't really talked to any other people from different provinces. Obviously, Krista McCarville is one of them that's already declined. But I'm sure depending on work situations and family life, I think people will elect to not go.
Okay. Hey, Warren, we got some, thanks a lot, Corinne. We're going to put you to work here, okay? You're going to hear some stuff that we're going to talk about, and we want to get your opinion on that. Warren, you did a little research, and Carlos, okay, from podstatus.com, sent us some interesting info about how we're doing inside curling. So some pretty cool information. I'll give you the quick Cole's notes of it. We are around the world. This just in, if you didn't know how the internet works, you can go around the world, Kev. Okay. I know you need updates technically on this sort of stuff. So we've got Switzerland and Poland and Austria and Canada, of course, and Italy, Latvia, Japan, and Norway. Are some of the people who are listening. There's many more, of course. And we're in the top 50 actually in categories, in the sports category, and a lot of that. Our low one is, so I'm going to put you on the spot, Corinne. Okay. The low one where we're not doing very well is Norway. So I just want you to sort of speak Norwegian, if you don't mind, Corinne, for the rest of the show. Okay. So we can get the Norway numbers up, but thanks a lot for everyone who's listening around the world. We appreciate it. Warren, our first, the first email we have is from a lady named Ling Yu Hung, who got a hold of us and sent you an email. I'll read it shortly here, Warren, but she's talking about the question of who's making decisions and who's consulting on the qualifications for juniors, which have changed a couple times over the past. So explain that, Warren, to everybody, what the issue is here with the juniors.
Well, I think the biggest issue that these people are starting to bring to our attention goes back to a little bit of history and the fact that when the Men's World Juniors came into existence in 1976. The Canadian Juniors was at that point in time played in March, and the World Juniors was in the end of February. So it was obvious the current winner wasn't able to go. So Canada started setting the winner a year late. And that continued on until 1995. And I can suggest to you of being part of that whole situation for about 15 years, it created a lot of difficulties. And Kevin lived through it as he was the Canadian Junior Champion in 1985. And we changed it in 1995 because the CISA champions came into existence, and the way the juniors had to fit into the whole scheme of things, it was going to have to be earlier in the year. And so we took that as an opportunity to begin to send the current champion to the World Championship. But what that meant across the board was the playoffs at the provincial level are now going to have to be scheduled about a month earlier than they had in the past. And some of them are going to have to go into December, maybe even late November, because of circumstances with Christmas. So it was at that point in time when we did this, it was again a battle, and a lot of provincial associations were upset. The fact they said, well, these kids are going to end their season now in January. And my point was back then, it is now, is that the only thing that they could be playing in is the Canadian Juniors? Can't you create some other events that they can compete in for the balance of the year? And since then, we now have, I guess, more of an ideal situation of why don't we have a split season? Half the year is four-person curling, and have the second half of the year as doubles and possibly triples curling with another set of Canadian championships maybe at the end of April. However, that isn't what happened. 2 years ago, they made a decision that was supposed to start this year that the current junior champion would wait 1 year again to play into the World Juniors, and that they were going to move the Canadian championship for juniors back into the month of March. So again, the provinces would have another month of curling for people at that level. So that's the controversy that's brought up in this letter by this lady in Ontario. And I think she's worded it very well as to what their concerns are there. And I think from what I've heard, the same concerns exist pretty much across the country.
Yeah. You, Warren, have been outspoken about, you know, the success of curling, if it's going to go forward, is you got to look after the juniors. You know, you got to figure out how we're going to keep them interested. So Ling writes us a letter. Hi there. Let me first say I enjoy listening to various aspects of your show. That means she doesn't enjoy other ones.
That's just when you're talking.
Yeah. I'm getting beaten up here. Okay. I'm getting beaten up today, Martin. You got to come to my rescue. Okay. That I enjoy various aspects of your show, especially when you start talking about junior curling and the future of Canadian curling. My husband and I are avid curlers, and I've helped my husband run a junior program for many years. Both my husband and I are certified curling coaches and parents of a junior competitive curler. I'm also very dismayed that Curling Canada has changed the qualification strategy for the junior worlds. What really bothered me was how it was decided. I don't think any junior curler in Ontario perceived that there was a problem. I do not believe that the real stakeholders, parents, and the actual players were consulted. I know that in Ontario, a petition was set up to try to stop the change, but to no avail. The canned response from the associations was that the junior season ended too early. At least in Ontario, the junior teams played four-person mixed and then mixed doubles after the season is over, quote unquote. Also, the more competitive teams continue to work towards improvement for the next year, and also that is when the team revectoring begins. I don't understand how the associations can say the junior season is over in January when it should be the association's responsibility to provide other competitions for juniors to play in their province. The competitions don't need to go to the nationals to be popular and effective. There needs to be stronger junior player representatives in the associations, as I feel that the reason for the change in age is an excuse for the associations to not own their responsibility and problem. I hope your podcast can influence Curling Canada and the provincial associations to see the error in their ways. And that's from Ling Yu Hung. Kev, lots there, right? She's got some strong language and verbiage about this thing. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, as you know, as most people know that know me, I walking back in time, thinking that you make a change because it needs to be made back in the 90s. And then 25 years later, you actually switch it back to the way it was. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all. And to Warren's point, I did live through the juniors where we had to wait a year. So that year I actually had two different teams and we didn't win with either because I didn't spend much time with either team, just a little with both. I'd like to hear Corinne's opinion on this too when I'm done. It just didn't work. And so now we've got kids doing the same thing again. And I think I was going to say obviously. I don't know if I should say obviously because it is obvious. The young teams should have been consulted. Absolutely. And some of the coaches that have been around forever should have been consulted. I'm sure they weren't. And that's a real problem. And I certainly think, and I've always thought that's one of the big reasons the Grand Slam came to being was to extend the season for all curlers, especially the young and up and coming ones. I started my junior bond spiel. Jeez, we ran it for 17 years. I think Mark's Kennedy's taken it over and ran it for probably another five or six. So let's say 20, 25 years ago, the reason I started that junior bond spiel was because the junior season was so short. So I actually always ran it in April for 17 years. We had 78 curling teams come to Edmonton for all those years so that they had a big event to play in April. That would weigh other small events could fit in between the, as Ling puts it, the end of the curling season for the kids. Well, we put a big event at the end and therefore it would fill in with other bond spiels. So I really do like Warren's thinking about if you want to put the Canadian junior four person curling, if you're going to have the Canadian championship in January or whatever, fine, no problem. Then start the doubles and triples curling right after that. And let's have a Canadian championship junior mixed doubles or triples. I honestly believe this triples game is going to be big in the future. Let's have a Canadian championship at the end of the year, April, early May. We want the kids, the young people in our sport to play the longest of everybody, not the shortest. We want the young kids to play more games than anybody else so they can get as good as possible, as young as possible. So we have really good young athletes representing us at a younger age at the World Championships and at the Olympic Games. So this is all quite important. And talking about representatives on all the associations, yes, we need junior representatives, absolutely, but we need players represented just overall. You know, we don't have much for player reps on any of these boards, be it provincial or national, and that's a real problem. I know it is getting better than it was, but we could certainly use more young voices involved. And, you know, we've started with that. It's starting to come, that Gen Z Facebook group page that through Inside Curling and Tyler Powell, who we had on the show a few weeks ago, it's growing actually quite well. And Warren, I'll have an update on that later in the show, but it's growing quite well. And that's great to see.
Corinne, you heard all that. You came up through the junior ranks and you were really good, as I was saying earlier. What's your take on that, Corinne, on the junior curling stuff?
Yeah, I struggle with this because I think in our situation, we were all 17 when we won the Canadian Juniors. So we were quite young in the grand scheme of it. When we ended up going to Russia, we're playing women, and essentially we're teenagers here and we're playing women, right? So they're stronger and just older and more experienced. So I think potentially our team could have benefited from that extra year kind of being sent the following year. But I think that's a very small case scenario. I think it was just a situation that we experienced. I think we've had great reps going forward for who's represented us. So I think that was more so just we were 17, happened to go on a run at the Canadians, and then we're just younger than most at Worlds. I think something that's beneficial for the group nowadays is having that U18 championship. We had a U18 championship when we played as well, but the way we qualified for that through in BC was through a U16 event. So we had that gap between when we were going to play juniors and U16. So there wasn't kind of that bridge where you do have a later season with the U18s being in, I think, March a little bit later. So I think that's a really good way that there potentially is a way to elongate it, but then you get for the 18 and 20 or 19 and 20 year olds, you're a little bit limited. But we did find universities was also a good way to elongate our season. So that's something that we did in our later years in juniors. It really helped to make our season a bit longer. And mixed doubles wasn't quite around when we were curling in juniors, but I think that would have also been a great way to elongate it. So hopefully something comes up in way of junior kind of mixed doubles to make that fit. But I'm not quite sure that sending the next year's rep for the following year is a good solution, just because people might want to change teams. They might want to take a year off to go to school or what have you. Like, there's just life things that could get in the way that might be prolonged based on that fact.
Hey, Corinne, I was just wondering if, have you played much mixed doubles? And I wanted to also, besides that, also triples. Have you played much at your club? But mixed doubles for sure.
Actually, I started a mixed doubles league at our club last season. The Kamloops Curling Club didn't open this season just because of COVID, but we really found we weren't really getting the competitive games we wanted in our women's league or our super league. So we wanted something that would challenge us a little bit more. And we found mixed doubles, regardless of who you're playing, you can play in a way that challenges you. You can make yourself play a bit more difficult shots. So we found that even if we weren't playing experienced curlers, we were able to get that strategy and the finesse shots that we were wanting in a practice game.
So Warren, how do we fix this? What's the perfect solution then for junior curling then? Like the Brian, the Scotties, right? Is, you know, general, you know, without COVID here, COVID aside, the playdowns are in, provincial playdowns are in February, and then you go in March. Okay, approximate.
Yeah, Warren, I want to hear a perfect solution that you don't get any negative responses.
Well, I mean, first of all, I understand the issue because I heard it for 15 years, and it was between one provincial association and myself. It was an annual discussion we had about moving the juniors back into the month of March because the fact that the kids had nothing to play in when the playdowns were finished on January 5th or whatever the case was. And I kept saying at that point in time, as we see here in Ontario, well, can you not develop other competitions for these people to play in that probably end at a provincial level for the second half of the season? And I explained at that point in time, and I'm going right now, I don't know the difficulties are going to exist here because the junior event was put into the season champion schedule, which the season champion schedule is roughly, you're on a week, off a week, as far as events are concerned, from the middle of January right up until early part of April. And by moving that junior event into March, you all of a sudden erode that television schedule. So TSN is in the month of March already covering the Brier and the Women's Worlds and the beginning of the Men's Worlds. So there really aren't any weekends left. So I'm not sure how that event can even continue to be part of a Season of Champions televised event being put into the month of March, which again, I would have to think is going to impact the title sponsorship of that event in some way, shape, or form as well. So I don't quite get it all to make this drastic move because, again, a 15 to 20 year complaint from the provincial level hasn't been dealt with in finding a solution other than this. And again, I think the perfect solution is mixed doubles is an Olympic sport, which means other than men's and women's curling, it should be the most important thing we're concentrating on from a Curling Canada point of view, which that's their responsibility if we want to get right back down to it, is high performance. So to not have a Canadian mixed doubles junior championship doesn't make any sense to me going forward. And I think ideally, if you left the Canadian junior championship where it was in March and kept sending, or pardon me, in January, February, and keep sending the current champion, and then start this mixed double season. And maybe it's a combination of mixed doubles and triples that goes on to a second Canadian championship that could maybe happen in the middle of April. Again, why do we have to have everything running in the month of March and early April? We can go into May these days with some of these events and extend the season even further for these younger people. So I think there's other solutions, and I think the one they've chosen, quite frankly, is the wrong one.
Don't be so wishy-washy, Warren. Give us, you know, don't sit on the fence on this kind of stuff. Corinne, you're a young curler. Can you add to that? What's the kind of word on the street with your generation coming up? If you had to talk about something that you think that should change that should be changed in the game, or what do you like, or what, for lack of a better term, don't like? What do you think should come into place to improve the game?
Yeah, I think there are some changes that need to be done at a competitive level, obviously, but I think also just bringing in people of my generation into the sport that might not be in a competitive sense. I think, for example, the Kelowna Curling Club has done a good job of having, I think it's a beer and burger and curl night. So I think you pay $30, you get a burger, a beer, and you get to be on the ice for a couple hours. So I think that's a way to kind of attract that younger generation to make curling a bit more appealing. I think growing up, curling wasn't necessarily the coolest sport to be a part of. So I think adding that factor in it might make it a bit more appealing to that younger generation.
Yeah, we got to make it cool, right? We got to make it hip.
Fun, quick, and engaging.
Hey, Warren, have you been on the Gen Z Facebook group we've got going? Have you been reading the responses and discussion?
Yes, I have.
There's so much talk about mixed doubles and triples and even singles and how quick the games are. Just so everybody knows, this the Facebook group we're talking about is for people, not Warren and I, but because inside curling is part of it, we're allowed to go on this site, but it's for people that are born in 95 or later. So that's Generation Z. And in order to be accepted into this group, you have to be that age. So it's all young people talking, which is absolutely fantastic. And I don't get involved with the discussions, but I read them. And a lot of the talk is about mixed doubles, triples, and singles, and the quickness of the game and how much fun it is and how athletic it is. Because as Corinne knows, when mixed doubles, you throw the rock, a lot of times you'll get up and sweep it. So throwing it, getting up, sweep it all the way to the other end, that's a lot of activity. Your heart rate will be up at 180. And then the other team throws only 25, 30 seconds. You've got to do it again. So the fitness of mixed doubles is a lot more. And I really think that we as a curling community, older community, should pay attention to what these young people are saying, because it's been pretty clear. Corinne, are you on our Gen Z group?
I am not. I consider myself a millennial.
Okay.
No, I haven't. I'm right on that teetering line of Gen Z and millennial. But I actually haven't tuned in.
Okay, because it's kind of interesting listening to these young people talk, because they're in the high teens and low 20s. And I do, yeah, you're 25. So kind of, like you say, just a smidgen above the Tyler Powells and Tyler Tardys. But the talk of mixed doubles and quicker games, not the two and a half hour game. That's fairly interesting. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, even just playing mixed doubles last year, it made me appreciate the game in a different way, I'd say. Just being a skip my whole career, I think you kind of get in that rut. But I think being involved in the sweeping and the judging, and but also being involved in the line calling and shot calling, I think it has all aspects of the game that the four-person game might not touch. And I think, yeah, I really like it. And I think you have to be so much more precise with your shots that it does make you a better curler in the long run.
I want to bring this now. This is going a little bit segueing off of this topic a smidgen, just because you talked about you're enjoying the sweeping and getting into different things. So I want to talk about your practice regimen a little bit, and how much time you would spend, be it at all the different things. If your team is throwing, do you sweep them? Do you sweep a lot? Do you time stones? Do you get involved in that? Because I know you're a skip. But for myself, I always did. I swept a ton in a practice, and mixed doubles would be kind of up my alley. But unfortunately, Warren didn't get around to inventing it in time. But I guess your practice regimen, because of the importance of mixed doubles going forward, is that something that you consider important in your personal practice?
I would say I'm guilty of not sweeping frequently in practices. Listening to the podcast you guys have with Matt Dunstone, I think I'm on the same line as him, but I'm definitely not sweeping every rock that I'm throwing like you, Kevin. But I think it's important. I would say I probably don't prioritize it as much as I should. I think as a career skip, it'd probably be a smart thing for me to try to diversify my game, because maybe I don't skip my whole life, and hopefully I would be a half decent sweeper if it came down to it. But
yeah, or mixed doubles, of course, with you being one of the top young players coming up on a year where, say, you don't go to the Olympic Games as with a four-person team, all of a sudden you've still got that opportunity maybe to go to the Olympic Games with a mixed doubles, or hopefully in the future doubles. It could be two, you know, girls or guys doubles as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is probably the least I've swept ever in my life, because I'm not even allowed to sweep past the tee line. So I've swept very little this season.
In the COVID times, yes.
Yeah, that's a very good point about the mixed doubles. So I think that's something that skip players should probably be prioritizing a little bit more, just to be a bit more involved. So it's not necessarily that one person is just sweeping the entire time for mixed doubles, that you are switching off and becoming a more well-rounded player for sure.
So tell us this, Corinne, you've had a ton of success, and Kevin brought up this thing about practice. So walk us through one of your practices then. What goes on? What do you guys concentrate on, and what are you trying to improve?
I think it depends on what point in the season you are at. In the beginning of the season, we're focusing more on technical. So you're kind of refining the little things and just kind of making sure you're in tip-top shape and sliding straight at the line, and then progresses throughout the season to more getting more team shots involved. So one thing we do a lot is kind of play scenarios. So we'll say, okay, we're up to with hammer or without hammer, what have you, and I'll skip one team and my coach will skip the other team, and just kind of play out their scenarios and have discussions on both sides, especially if we're kind of flip-flopping on one particular situation, just to play it out. And even just placing the rocks, okay, if I put a rock on the corner guard, what are you doing now? I think getting that more strategic brain, especially in a season like we are in now, where we haven't really played a lot, we haven't really gotten our brains wrapped around the strategy part. So we're really trying to implement both shot making as well as strategy and just sweeping. Our players haven't really swept a lot this year. So we're trying to make more game simulation right now, just in regards to, we haven't played and we have the Scotties coming up in just over a month. So that's where we're at right now. But in our normal year, you definitely have that progression from like technical to tactical. And then just kind of, if you're just working on a specific shot, if you're struggling with something, that shot specific practice as well.
Right. Warren, what did you guys do? But when you hear about these practice regimens, no one can keep up with Martin. I forget what you told us, Kevin, when you practiced, how many freaking stones you threw a day. I was exhausted hearing it. Warren, back in your day, was practicing a part of the deal back then? Did you practice less? Did you practice more? And what did you do if you did practice?
Well, back in my day, Jim, most people didn't practice. I was kind of the oddball in the fact that I did, and I had my own routines. And I can remember probably at the year we won the Brier, I had a routine where I would go and work out probably from 10 till noon, kind of like Kevin, have some lunch. And then at the Granite Curling Club in Edmonton, I'd be there probably from about 1 o'clock till 2 o'clock. And I had a routine I went through by myself, but as far as the shots I would throw and how I would go through the whole process. But for the most part, other one that I played with is Ron Anton, who had a similar type of routine, but not as much as I did, because again, he was a school teacher and simply didn't have the time. But I think we're back at a point in time where people were more into curling wasn't the mainstay of their life. They had jobs, they had families that were their main focus. And for the most part, they didn't have time to spend a lot of extra hours throwing practice rocks. But a few people did, mm-hmm. besides myself, but I was kind of the beginning of adding a physical component to it, of working out and actually having a routine to practice. And of course, as I came into the whole development of the Curl Canada program, tried to instill some of that stuff into the whole aspect of the sport going forward. I mean, you can go back the fact of when I first came into the scene of developing the Curl Canada program, there was no warm-up. prior to a curling game, you could not set your toe on that ice before the first end, and then you could maybe take one slide. And it was considered to be part of the game. You couldn't go on the ice because then you'd know something about the conditions. So I had a five-year battle. It took 5 years to get from that to where warm-up is today prior to a game at the top competitive level where you're on the sheet that you're going to play on for 10 minutes. That took 5 years to get that changed to that degree. And slowly but surely, first you could slide. Then you could, at one point, you could throw rocks, but you couldn't throw on the sheet that you're going to be playing on. And finally, I think it was in 1980, Brian Calgary was the first time when smoking was also taken off the ice for the first time that you could actually have a practice on the sheet you were playing on before the start of the game.
So are you telling me guys like Ed the Wrench, Ed Werenick, and Hex Gervais, they didn't spend all day practicing, those guys?
I don't know about the Wrench, but I mean, I played with Hector, and I can assure you, I mean, the way Hector played, he curled about three games a day. That was the way he got himself to where he had to be. So it was a different time. And I mean, I worked most of my life trying to change the way things were back in those days, because if curling was going to become a medal sport in the Olympics, the way things were in the 70s, there was absolutely no chance that was ever going to happen.
Right. We got an email from Andrew McMillan. He says, fellas, I've been listening to the podcast lately and have been very interested in the discussion on growing the game. We get a lot of people weighing in on that. I'm also currently a board member at the Weyburn Curling Club in Saskatchewan. I'm one of those players that hasn't been able to play as much with career and family becoming a priority in the last 8 years. Since I haven't been able to play tour events and spiels regularly, I would just get a throw team and play in the regionals with hopes of getting to the provincials. It's becoming increasingly difficult to do that here in Saskatchewan as they have decreased the number of teams in the provincials and taken away the North and South qualifier spiels. As for the Briar format, before I read the rest of that, didn't you tell me that there was a time when there was 10,000 teams vying for the Briar? We were talking earlier this morning, and now there's less than 300?
Well, I mean, back in the Labatt's days, they used to claim 15,000. And I'm going, that's probably a little bit of a stretch, but there might have been 10,000 in the 80s.
Wow, crazy. Okay.
And the figure that was given to me here about a month ago, last year, there was 274.
Wow.
And Kevin and I have talked about that, and we thought that that was maybe generous even.
Andrew goes on to say, as for the Briar format, I think I would like to see a national championship that is the Briar, as it was with all provinces and territories represented in 12 teams with a full round robin. The top 2 to 4 teams from this event should go on to compete in the Canada Cup with the top 10 or 12 teams from the CTRS list, then send the winner of the Canada Cup to the Worlds. Then those top teams won't have to compete in the Briar and will still have a chance to go to the Worlds. This will also give the second tier teams in provinces like Manitoba, Alberta, and Ontario a chance to play at the Briar and potentially win it. Keep it going, guys. I've enjoyed listening to the show so far. Hopefully some positive change will come from this discussion. Hope to hear back from you. Thank you, Andrew McMillan. Let's start with you, Warren, on that.
Yes, interesting email. But let me first go back to Weyburn, because there's something about Weyburn that I'd forgotten about. Weyburn probably has one of the only curling museums in the world. And a guy by the name of Don Turner, who was well known in the curling community for many years from Saskatchewan, Don's no longer with us, but he started an actual museum in Weyburn. And I've been through that museum, and it's very good. If you ever have an opportunity to drive either down there or through there, to make sure you see the Turner Curling Museum, which is now being maintained by the city of Weyburn, since Don Turner's no longer with us. So that's something I should have mentioned to start with, but that's an interesting thing about Weyburn. So Andrew's point, and it maybe is a good one, is to maybe this is the way that we can realistically get from the current mode of how things are being done to a new one, and the fact that we could keep this interprovincial competition going, but you virtually take those top teams out of it, which is going to increase the interest, I believe, across the board. And we can go back to the years that Gushue didn't participate in Newfoundland and the entries increased threefold. I think you would find that everywhere. And for this whole interprovincial thing to get a rebirth or interest in it, I think that could be the secret. It would then also set the situation that the best teams in the country, plus one or two from this interprovincial competition, would be playing to determine who represents Canada at the Worlds in both men's and women's. So his suggestion is maybe a reasonable one as to how you could begin to get things going in maybe a little different direction than they are right now, because we've gone through this and hammered it 100 times over. Mm-hmm. The interest in this thing is going down by the year. And the fact that at one time there were thousands of teams entering to play in Brier, and I'm not sure how many in the Scotties, but it was big, Canada wide. And I mentioned before, back in Labatt days, they used to claim 15,000. Maybe it was more like 10,000, but it was still large. Mm-hmm. And I think this last year there was 274 teams Canada wide that entered the playoffs to participate in the Brier. And when you think about it, I'm not sure how many curling clubs there are today in Canada. I mean, one time that was claimed to be 1,000. I would guess realistically today, maybe it's something like 700. But if you think about it, at 274 teams, that isn't even one team per curling club. And we certainly know in many of the competitive areas, most of the teams that do enter any of these playoffs come from the same club. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know today. I go back again, Edmonton, where I played in the competitive level. And I still have mentioned this before. The city of Edmonton Playdowns used to have 70 teams trying to grab 4 spots. And Kevin can update us on that one, but I doubt this last few years if there's been even 8 teams.
Right.
So it's a changed world. And if we don't address this situation and start to look at trying to come at this from a different way, it's going to get less and less every year because of that's where things are going.
Right. Corinne, how do you think the national champion should be crowned?
That's a loaded question. I flip back and forth on this one. I think as a young kid, I always grew up wanting to represent BC at the Scotties. That was something that I always dreamt of and wanted to accomplish. So I think when we had that game to win and we won and went to the Scotties, I think that was really cool. So I have part of me likes that nostalgia of all the provinces and it being a national championship in that regard. But then I also look at the flip side where you see teams like Tracy Fleury and Kelsey Rock, who are the top in our country and aren't represented at the event, but they're working super hard. They're making career choices and family choices to commit to the game, but aren't necessarily being rewarded in being able to play in a national championship. So I know I've heard kind of different suggestions, such as the top 10 or top 16 in Canada getting to play in the Scotties. And I think I would be a bit sad in regards that you don't have that kind of gratification of winning your provincial or winning that final game to get somewhere. You just kind of get awarded, kind of similar to how it feels right now to have been given our spot to the Scotties. It feels a bit, there's not as much, I guess, excitement in that regard. So I think it would just be a bit of a different feel. But I also think teams that are going out and playing hard, curling every second weekend, making career and family choices to be able to play should be rewarded for that as well. They shouldn't necessarily be kind of kept out of the Scotties just based on them having a province that has a lot of depth in it.
You're very well spoken, Corinne. I'm very impressed, you know, with you're better spoken than me, Kevin, or Warren. Okay, so it's good. We need guests like you on the show. So Kev, Andrew says national championship from the Brier with all provinces representing 12 teams, full round robin, 2 to 4 of those teams from this event would go on to compete at the Canada Cup with the top 10 or 12 teams from the Canadian team ranking system. What do you think, Kevin?
Well, I definitely think that in the sport of curling in Canada, there has to be an event where a winner of each province competes and battles it out. Now, I guess the issue that's going on, because we get a ton of emails and responses and you name it, messages from all over the place, is I guess what's the purpose? So I really think it's important that a winner of BC, a winner of Alberta, so on. Now, I really do honestly believe that should be an amateur championship. When you're talking about getting somebody could win that championship. I totally think that. Now, do they get invited into this Canada Cup? These are just names being thrown out. Sure, I guess. The bottom line, though, if we're going to give somebody the crown of being the national women's champion in Canada, that person should have to beat the best teams, not 4 of the best teams or 5 of the best teams. Now, if you want to have a national championship, somebody from every piece of the of Canada. Great. That's a wonderful thing. Has to happen. Our country is all about curling. Has to happen. I don't understand why that person would go to the Worlds, because it's not the strongest field you can get. I just don't understand. I guess my brain, it just doesn't work that way. Like, I know it's traditional and all that kind of stuff, but in real life, we want the best team to represent us at the World Championship or at the Olympic Games. I don't think it would make sense to use this format to send a team to the Olympics. So why do we do it for the Worlds? That's interesting. But to answer your question, Jimmy, do I agree with this? I love the full round robin too. When it comes to these, a national event, the amateur championship, should everybody play everybody? Absolutely. You make so many friends that way. Mm-hmm. It's all about, it's fun and friendships. And so, yes, you definitely want to get to know everybody. And when you're in the locker rooms, make sure you move around and don't sit in the same spot all the time. Visit with everybody in the locker room. It's a wonderful thing. But that's different, in my opinion, than crowning a national champion. I think that Kelsey Rock, if a different team from Alberta were to win Alberta, how can Kelsey Rock not be in the national championship? This is ridiculous. So, and how do you not have Fleury, Anderson, and Jennifer Jones all in the national championship just because they all live in the same province? No, you can't all three be in there. I know you're ranked 1, 2, and 3 in our country, but sorry, can't do it. Well, that's ridiculous. Those three have to be in the national championship. So I guess it's kind of making the change mentally where what each event means. And that's, I guess, the stumbling block right now. But yes, there has to be a championship from every province. There has to be a national championship where the team gets crowned to the world championship. That may not be the same event. That's all.
Yeah, I think the other problem is that what doesn't come out in this is what's going on right now is kind of this band-aided hybrid they've created where you now can have a team representing, well, I always use Homan's team, not to pick on them, but I mean, three of them are living in Alberta, yet they're representing Ontario. And that's not the only team. There's many others that have two. And as we saw, the men's champion last year, Conquerin for PEI, those guys were three of them in Ontario. So it's been kind of, it's not really a true interprovincial competition any longer by what's happened. So again, maybe by what's been suggested to us by Andrew, if you went back to that interprovincial competition and said, okay, every province and territory is going to be represented. So that's 14 teams, but there's going to be no border jumping. You will be playing from the province you live in, and that is it, no exceptions. And so that would create a whole different flair to that interprovincial event as well. And I think Kevin agrees, and I think Corinne does as well. The winner, or maybe the top two teams from that interprovincial competition, do get berths in if it's the Canada Cup that determines the team going to represent Canada at the World. So again, I know this is a hot topic, and I know it's also being divided pretty much by age. And we're seeing the older part of our curling population absolutely does not want anything aspect of this changed. But I'll emphasize again, if we look at statistically where all this is going, if we don't change something, it's going to fade off the map because it's becoming less and less each year as far as the people attending in the stands and the teams entering this competition because of the way it is.
So Warren, if I want to hear your thoughts on this one. You and I don't, we haven't discussed this one. So 274 teams competed last year to into the national, trying to get into the national championship and to win it. Okay. If this change is made and the interprovincial championship becomes an amateur championship, the top X, 10, 12, 16 teams on the Canadian team ranking system are not allowed in it. How many teams do you think would enter the playdowns rather than 274? What do you think? Give me a number. I have a number in my mind.
I think initially it may start slow, but I would think within a couple of years you would probably at least double that, and I think it would continue to increase, quite frankly, because it'd be quite a different approach, and all of a sudden a bunch of people like Andrew, who can't participate at this full time, he's got a chance now, probably, maybe he can win Saskatchewan, whereas now he's going in this thing pretty much what he's saying, I'm going to see how far I can go, but he knows pretty much he can't win it. So I think you'd have a whole change of mindset. And I think it would maybe create a rejuvenation in this aspect of the game and across the country. And it's only speculating. You're not going to know until you try it. But I think it's obvious the old system, but what we're seeing in numbers in the building and as far as in participation, it's decreasing. And the only place the numbers are holding pretty good is television. But again, if we take a look at the demographic on television, You know, it's very old. I mean, we go back to talking to the Barry Curling Club. What's the average age he remembers? 58. And then you talk to when Matt was on with us a few weeks ago, but the number of kids that are dropping off that after they play junior, what would he, I think he said 80% do not continue into adult curling. So all this stuff has to be weighed and taken a look at seriously and to make some initially, I guess, changes that you're going to experiment with to see how it goes and then try and feel your way along with what's going to be the best, which is during my time, we were experimenting with stuff all the time to see, is this going to work better? Is that going to work better? And I think that's what you've got to do.
Right. Corinne, the members of your team, are they all from BC or are they from different parts of the country?
We're actually three of us are from the same city, in fact, too. So we have three of us from Kamloops, and then Dez is also from BC. So all four of us are from BC. I've never played with an out-of-province player.
What about the skins game, fellas? And Corinne is we got an email from Adam. I think it's Rochelot. It's French from Quebec. Rochelot. What about the skins game? Hi guys, my name is Adam Rochelot, and I'm a huge curling fan from Noranda, Quebec. I started listening to your podcast a few days ago and love it. I also run a curling podcast in French with a friend of mine. We've had Guy Hemmings on, and we've had Menard. I remember him. Pierre Charette, of course, I know. Marie-France Laroche, and also Russ Howard. In your podcast, you talk about the lack of scoring in the game today. Obviously, the timing system are a problem. You also talk about the growth of mixed doubles as a solution. But what about skins games? I think it is the most exciting format, and it means that it faded away. It seems it's faded away in the last few years. Plenty of rocks in play, great shots and strategies. I would love to see more skins events, on TV. Thank you for your fine works, fellas. And that is from Adam. Kev, what do you think?
Well, I love the skins game. Competed in, I wouldn't even know how many, between the McCain skins and the Goodwrench skins and the M&M skins over the years. I absolutely loved them. The McCain's was in early December, I think, or just before Christmas. And then the Goodwrench or the M&M skins was between Christmas and New Year's. I absolutely love them for that exact reason, Adam. Lots of great shots, lots of rocks in play, strategy. You know, the other thing that I really enjoyed was that, and I think that the young people will enjoy this too if they get to play skins games much, is that you basically have, if it's an 8-end game, you've got 8 individual games. So you talked about Tyler Powell liking short games. Well, that is what a skins game is. You play an end, game's over, on to the next game. And you try to either get a deuce or steal one. And so I totally enjoy a skins game. One thing that's kind of neat, when a boat, I wouldn't be half the time, but they say 25% of the time we make scoreboards, and you can make them with four empty spaces at the end of the scoreboard for skins games. They can go up to $10,000. And about 20-25% of the time when we build scoreboards for curling clubs, they kind of look like a normal club, but you have to include dollar signs, more zeros, and a wider space at the end for the total score because it's cash and X's and O's and so on. But about 20-25% of the scoreboards we make for clubs across Canada and around the world actually are prepared for skins games. So it's still pretty popular, to Adam's point here. It's still pretty popular. Should it be more popular? Why not? Why not? I love the idea of short little games. It doesn't have to be 8 ends. You can play 6 ends even. And that'd be done in about an hour and a half. But you're right. And he mentions this timing system's a problem. If you play a skins game type game, it would definitely be time per end, which is where the game's going to go to in Canada anyway, and around the world. Before too long, it'll be time per end. Corinne, have you played skins?
Not in a kind of official situation. Like, we've played against teams. Well, sometimes we'll just to get more of that situational experience, just because those are situations you're in all the time, being one up or having to get a deuce or whatever. So we've played it in like an informal setting, but not formally. We haven't played it. No.
Okay.
Do you like it, Corinne, the idea of skins?
Yeah, for sure. I think it makes it a lot more exciting, and chances are you're going to have a lot of rocks in play. I was even watching, I think it was one of the Grand Slams the other day on TV, was, was Skins format. And it was really entertaining to watch. Like it's pretty good for the viewers as well.
Hey, Warren, you know, I never liked the All-Star game in hockey. You know, I just didn't like it until they started the skills competition. And then I thought it was really good. I loved it. You've been around, Warren, a long time, and you've done, I remember for, you know, the Ford Hot Shots, that you guys did was great. What do you think of the Skins game, Warren, and the skills competitions?
I like it for a lot of reasons. One is every end is virtually a game. But the other thing is, because of the way skins are cumulative, the latter part of skins games usually are worth more money. And as a result, the games aren't going to end early. It can happen, but usually it's going to go right to the end. So as Kevin suggests, you could make a six-end skins game, which, again, maybe in some situations is the answer. And I go back when we designed the Continental Cup, we brought skins in as part of the disciplines of the Continental Cup, and we put it in the last day. And why we did that is because you could set up those skins games so you're not allotting money now, you're allotting points. And when you got into you start off the game with low points and you get into the far end, if you have carryovers, some of those ends could be worth enough points to almost have one side or the other win the Continental Cup. So we put those skins games in the flatter part of it for those reasons, because it's got that kind of excitement attached to it. So I think they're great. And I agree to a very large degree that possibly it's something that should be incorporated a little more into the sport. Whether or not there's room there for a skins championship, maybe there is, but I think it should be maybe looked at being used more than it is, because of the excitement of it and the fact that you can pretty much be assured it's all going to go right down to the last rock of every game.
Corinne, we want to talk to you about you before we go at the end of the we're at the end of the show. But when I was reading your stats at the top of the show when we introduced you, like I said, this girl is really good. This girl's really good. A lot of the talk we have, as you heard through the show today, is about getting younger people interested in the game. How do we do that? How do we move ahead and get the juniors, you know, looked after? How did you come up through the ranks, Corinne? How did you get interested in curling, and what was it that attracted you to the game?
Yeah, my dad curled competitively. He, Ken Brown, he went to the 96 and 97 Briars. For Barry McPhee. So he was quite competitive when I was younger. So I was really interested in that regard. My teammate Aaron Pincott and I, we started playing together. I started curling when I was four, but I started curling with Aaron when I was six. So I've curled with her for all but 1 year since we were 6 years old. Wow. And we her grandpa, Grant Young, who also played with Barry McPhee in a previous Briar, we always grew up wanting to be the first women to play in the Briar. That was kind of our goal. Okay. Not really knowing that the Scotties were a thing when we were quite young, just because we had only really been exposed to the Briar. But when we soon found out about the Scotties, that really sparked our interest. And having the Strauss Canada Cup in Kamloops, I think, was huge for us for so many years. We would stay up well past our bedtime trying to get people's autographs. I'm sure we asked you a time or two, Kevin, when we were younger. Aaron and I were just rink rats around there. And then we joined forces with Sam when I think we were 11. And we had the same team of myself, Aaron Pincott, Samantha Fisher, and Sydney Fraser for 10 years, all throughout juveniles and juniors. So we won three juvenile championships, and then we won to go to the Canada Games and won gold there. So kind of went up through those ranks, and then went to the Canadian Juniors where we won gold our first year. And then in 2015, we got bronze. Won three provincial championships as a junior. And then what I think really helped our transition from juniors to women's was playing in universities. And that's something I think that needs to be talked a little more about. I don't think there's necessarily the support from certain universities to support curling, even monetarily. For a lot of our careers in universities, we were on our own having to pay our way. And obviously that's not something that we were going to do anything to be able to play in another national championship. So that wasn't necessarily a deterring factor for us. But I think for a lot of people, if they don't have that support from their university, they're not going to play. So that might be why a lot of juniors drop off after that that level because they're wanting to pursue an education, but they don't see an outlet that they're able to curl in as well. So I think that's something that might not necessarily be touched on enough is that university level. And we were fortunate enough to play in quite a few championships. And I think that helped bridge the gap between juniors and women's for us. And now here we are and just kind of grinded it out through the World Curling Tour, just doing as much as we can. I think something that we recognized early on was the need to travel. There wasn't as much of a tour established in BC. So we recognized we needed to go where the points were, especially in the day and age that we live right now where points are everything. So we were going to Alberta, we're going to Saskatchewan, we're trying to break into that tier two slam. So that's something we really prioritized was traveling and making sure that we have the funds to be able to do that. So that's
where did you go to university, Corinne?
Here in Kamloops. We went to Thompson Rivers University. We're fortunate to have myself, Aaron Pincott, Samantha Fisher, and then Sydney at the time, as well as Ashley Klimchuk, who we played with last year. We had quite a career, and then Desiree played with us 1 year as well. So we were pretty lucky that we didn't have to change teams too much throughout that university career as well.
And how is it funded for you? You'd mentioned this about trying to improve the university game and get more involved. Everyone talks about U of A as being probably the top university for curling teams. How did you guys do it back in those days? And who paid for everything and what was covered and what wasn't, et cetera?
Yeah, it varied on the year. I know there was 1 year we were able to get a sponsor. I think university allowed up to two sponsors, I think, to be displayed on your jacket. So we were able to get some money that way when we went to Ontario. Up until, I believe, our last year, we weren't funded at all by the university. So that's a bit of a unique, well, maybe not unique situation where the university doesn't actually support monetarily whatsoever. So that can definitely be a deterring factor. Obviously, a university like the U of A really prioritizes their curling program and recruits people to it. So I think that's something that's really valuable. But people aren't necessarily going to TRU to curl. It was more so just the fact that we had four good curlers that went to the same university. So the university didn't really factor us into their budget, even though we were one of their best performing teams in the history of the university at a national championship. We weren't really prioritized. So I think just the optics of curling isn't necessarily something that a university wants to put their money into necessarily.
Right on. Before we let you go, the game itself, Corinne, we get a lot of people giving us their opinion on a curling game, and lots of people are suggesting changes. What do you think about that? Are you happy with the game itself? Lots of people talk about shortening the ends, going to eight ends and blank ends to deal with that. What do you say to all that about the game itself?
Yeah, I think there's some things that are being changed that have helped the game for sure, such as the five rock rule. I think that's done some really good things for the game, but people are getting so good at those ticks and being so precise with things like that. So I think there's probably some more changes coming along. I wouldn't say I have a strong opinion either way, but I think any way to make a game a little bit more exciting and a little less blank ends and whatnot is going to definitely help the game in the long run, especially for viewership.
Once again, Kevin has brought on a guest, Corinne Brown. We thank you very much. And you're obviously way smarter, way, 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 way more well-spoken than any of us. So best of luck to you, Corinne. We really appreciate you coming on this morning.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Hopefully I provided some good insights.
Did you ever? Yeah. Did you ever? So
awesome.
Yeah. Good luck. Stay Thanks, safe. Corinne. And we'll be watching for you. Boys, that's another episode of Inside Curling. We'd like to thank our sponsor. Manscaped. Okay. If you haven't heard of Manscaped, well, you're going to hear about it right now. They are the number one below the waist grooming company. They were a Shark Tank company. They got funded by two of the sharks. They bought 25% of the company. It's available in Canada, and every Canadian male now has the chance of experiencing Manscaped's life-changing products. Go to manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com. And if you use the code Inside Curling, you'll receive an amazing 20% off and free shipping. That's manscaped.com and use that code Inside Curling. Kevin, you look after yourself this week. Warren, I want you to stay inside. Okay. Everyone's got to be safe. We're into lockdown here, Martin, in Alberta. And I think it's going to be the same in Ontario, and who knows what else is going to happen. I think, Warren, we'll have to wait and see what hockey is supposed to start any minute now. And it was going to be fine 4 or 5 days ago. And then there's 3 or 4 teams that had some COVID scares. So I'm getting a sense, Warren, if they can pull the hockey off, that'll bode well for curling.
Well, I think that's something we've got to make clear to people. Hockey's in a whole different situation. They're out there, they're traveling, they're not in the bubble. And this event being planned in Calgary is going to be a bubble event. So it's a whole different aspect from a safety point of view. And so I think that's what everybody's got to remember. If Calgary does happen, and I think it will, it's in a bubble and it's approved by the governments for its safety. And I think it will be fine if everything is able to have it go ahead.
Kev, what's your network saying? You do a bunch of color commentary all year. What's happening from their side and their reaction to COVID?
Well, I think everybody's cautiously optimistic with the bubble event. You know, it's such a tough time, and it looks good, but boy, until that first rock is thrown at the Scotties, I guess we won't know for sure. But hopefully, Corinne can throw that first rock and get things underway.
Okay, everybody, thanks again for tuning in. We come at you each and every week with another episode of Inside Curling, and love your responses. You can email us at insidecurling@gmail.com, and we'll try and talk about it. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Of course, Twitter at Curling Inside, and Facebook at Inside Curling, and Instagram at Inside Curling Podcast. Corinne, you go back to doing what you're doing. Are you working? Are you keeping a job these days? What's happening?
Yeah, this is actually the first time I've ever worked in the months of December, January, and February in my life. I work seasonal for the provincial government wildfire. So normally I'm only working kind of March to November, but with COVID, I was like, might as well work if I'm not going to be curling.
Good. What are you doing? What's your job?
Right now I'm a training analyst. So I'm put on a project right now that we're developing this software that's kind of replacing some of our processes. Kind of a convoluted way of saying my job, but normally I work as a prevention clerk.
You sound way smarter than the three of us, I'll tell you right now. Take it easy, everybody. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week on another episode of Inside Curling.